Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back to the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on episode number
87.
87. And guys, I'm super excited because we just finished chapter 10, which was, I think, 17,000 verses. I might be rounding up a little bit.
Yeah, something like that.
It was about 17,000 verses long. And we are starting chapter 11. And my name is Shyama Sangeeta.
My name is Priyadarshini.
And I'm Shyamali.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be starting chapter 11. It is called
The Universal Four.
Wow. What does that mean? I guess we'll find out in this chapter.
Yeah. You know, like I've been watching Star Wars a lot lately. So when I just said that, the universal form, I thought of like the epicness, the intergalactic gravity of this.
Intergalactic.
Dun, 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 dun.
You have to cut it out there because okay. I don't think we want to, you know.
You know what's so interesting? Oh, like trademark?
Yeah.
Trademark. Oh, we're going to have to pay for a copyright. You know what I learned the other day at the ladies sangha that we had? Thank you to all of the ladies in Southern California that came out.
It was amazing, guys. Guys, thank you great. So much.
Yeah, that was our first time doing a lady sangha, and we got to meet fans of the podcast who just found us randomly, and we had a night of beautiful discussion and games and sweet kirtan.
So sweet. So far out also people who are like, I was literally listening to your podcast on the drive here and now I'm meeting you like in the flesh and now I'm going to drive home listening to you guys and it'll be so weird that I've met you. It was so cool.
It was really nice. Like overall just other people came who've heard of our podcast but also are just part of the Bhakti community around ladies, and they just said that they, you know, they've been looking for a place where they fit in, where they could have like real conversations and genuine honest discussions and just like friendship, and they really felt it there. So if you are one of the people that were planning to come and couldn't make it, like, we're gonna have another one and we can't wait to meet you. It's just like a good place to make friends, so no pressure. It's really lovely. We had a great time.
We hope to just build more and more of this sense of community. That's what we really want to do, because we've talked time and time again that spiritual life is so dependent on the community and the support system that surrounds you, so it doesn't become lonely.
Spiritual friendships, the importance of spiritual friendships.
Like right before we went on air, I was literally telling these two amazing ladies how meaningful this podcast is, that when you can wake up and feel like, okay, now I'm going to go plug into something that's so inspiring, that no matter what phase in my own personal life I am, this can take me out of whatever it is and inspire me to just bathe our intellect in the spiritual knowledge, connect and be inspired.
Our personal lives can be going through like a washing machine, but the moment we are reading the Gita together, it's like everything else just falls away. And this is the most important thing in our life.
Totally.
For sure. And I also think like for me, there's different parts in my spiritual journey in which I felt stronger or weaker or whatever. And I think for me, friendships really kept me going in the weaker times. So community, friendship, these are all really important things. And first of all, we're just so glad you're here today listening to us.
And I hope you feel encouraged to find those spiritual friendships in your life, wherever you are in the world. And you can do that in a variety of different ways. You can join certain clubs that are happening. There's probably, if there's a temple around you, there's bhakti communities, yoga studios, this podcast.
Universities usually have some sort of bhakti club or like meditation club, mantra meditation, something like that.
And you know what's a fun way, even connecting it to the podcast? If you're a listener, a lot of people that came to the Lady Sangha did this, that they have a friend or a significant other or someone that's close to them. They have them join the kind of book club buddies with listening to the podcast. They buy their own Gita and then they discuss it themselves afterwards. So they follow along with us, read the episodes they're on or read the text that we're on. And then it becomes really like you're a part of the book club. So if you're a listener, that's a fun way to like bring community into it. Yes. In a very tangible way.
Literally, if you love this podcast and you loved Gita, find one or two other friends, introduce them to the Modern Yogi podcast. Very subtle flex. Okay. All right. Introduce them, and then you can have your own little clubs.
Absolutely.
And
we're talking to you. Look at the ladies. Or look at the camera, ladies. Look at the ladies' camera.
Talking to you.
To you. Priya, do it.
Priya,
to
you
your
have
camera.
To do it.
Oh, to you.
Yeah, I did look at the camera. Okay. I just didn't say anything. Yeah, we're both waiting for Priya to do it.
Sorry, guys.
All right. Anything else before we get started on chapter 11 and the invocation?
Well, I think just quick recap of chapter 10. We just talked about Krishna. And so if you want to find out more, I'm just kidding.
Thank you for that really good recap.
You know, the last two episodes were really fun. Like, I would say if you guys have missed any of the episodes, check out the last two, because in the very last one, we did an epic wrap of a whole summary of chapter 10. That was so good. Yeah. You know, we don't even have to say it now. Just check out the ending of the whole last episode, but it's in the ending where we did a wrap. So if you want to hear Modern Yogi rap, check that out.
Spoiler alert, it's not very good, but it is entertaining.
Second spoiler alert, it was made by ChatGPT. It's entertaining. Just go watch it.
What was not made by ChatGPT?
ChatGPT?
There we go. Yeah. Thank you. Is the episode before that where we all took a turn saying one line of a beautiful pastime of Krishna. So those final two episodes were so much fun to do with you guys.
Yeah, check them out. So basically now we're going to get to know Krishna in his universal form.
Right.
Which is like super cool.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it's nice because it's a good setup with chapter 10 really leaves us on. Chapter 10 was all about the opulence of Krishna. So he says, out of this, I am that. Out of this category, I'm this best thing. Out of the stars, I am this or whatever. Like, he goes into that and now he's going to really like, boom, he's going to do a big flex on Arjuna and show him, you know, no one can claim to be God without displaying their epic universal form.
Yeah. And last thing on chapter 10, I think Krishna is so merciful because he's giving us so many different ways to remember him.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of us like taking the time and the initiative to find Krishna in all of these things, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's the sun and the moon and the ocean and the stars and the sharks. I mean, I don't know how many times you get to see sharks on a daily basis, but you know, like taking the time to like see Krishna in all of these beautiful things.
Right. Yeah, that was a beautiful reminder. Like you can go anywhere and think of Krishna and just brought it to the forefront.
Yeah, and it's amazing because I think most people naturally already feel sort of connected to something greater when they're in the outdoors, when they're in nature, when they're under the stars. And Krishna's saying like, I am that. I am behind that. I am that feeling that you get when you're in peace and nature, looking at the stars, you know, feeling the wind. Mm. Like he's all of that. So it's kind of cool to see Krishna be like, that feeling you have, I know why. It's because I'm there.
Yeah. And there is something about like humans seeing something bigger than ourselves. And then we feel the gravity of the situation and sometimes even the divine. Like in the past couple months, we've had like solar flares and like eclipses and stuff. And like people stop to go look at these things, even though they're not supposed to because it's not auspicious. But the point is, it's like these things are so big. And like Krishna is literally laying out like, I am these things, you know?
I mean, the whole universal creation is so perfectly created that you can't help but think there has to be a divine intelligence behind this. And without even getting into any of the details, I watched this whole talk between these two scientists saying that more and more, there's scientists who are also spiritualists because they realize that the whole timing of creation is so precise that if one thing were slightly off, then nothing would even exist. Life on Earth as we know it wouldn't have the conditions perfectly right to be able to flourish. And it was a whole 30-minute talk. So imagine they gave all this scientific explanation that half of it went over my head, but like, it's so cool to hear the details of how precise creation is that it just points towards there's a higher intelligence beyond it.
Beautiful.
Amazing.
On that note, the invocation, please, ladies.
Om Jnanati Virandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Okay. Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them.
Beautiful.
All right. Officially. Chapter 11, the universal form. Priyadarshini.
Text 1. Arjuna said, by my hearing the instructions you have kindly given me about these most confidential spiritual subjects, my illusion has now been dispelled.
Beautiful.
Arjuna is basically saying, okay, I'm listening to everything that you told me and now my meltdown is over. Right?
Right.
Well, do you think his conviction has fully changed at this point? Or is it more that he's like, wait, I recognize that because you are the son of all stars, you're the sun, or like of all bodies of water, you're the ocean. I'm quoting incorrectly here, but of all the greatest aquatic animals, you're the shark. Like, because of all these things, like, he's like, I understand who you are, and like, I no longer see you just as my friend or my cousin.
Yeah, I think
I think that's true. Prabhupada actually says something along what you're saying, Priya, in the purport. He says, okay, now as far as Arjuna is concerned, he says that his illusion's over, which basically means what you're saying. Arjuna no longer thinks of Krishna as a mere human and as a friend, but as the source of everything. Though when I read that, I thought, did Arjuna actually think of Krishna as just a mere human? Or in the back of his head, maybe deep down, he had an inkling of an idea like, okay, but Krishna's not just a human.
No, but I think like Krishna never like explicitly said, hey, dude, right. I'm God. Okay. Right. Like, I think in their friendship, they were cousins. They hung out.
Well, it's kind of like they say the inhabitants of Vrindavan know Krishna's God, but they're covered over by Maya, by illusion. Yes. So like Krishna's mother might see Krishna do something incredible, but then she goes back to like, oh, but he's just my little son.
Yeah. You know? They forget. Yeah. They're an illusion.
I think similarly, right? Like, like you said, it's not like Krishna goes around going, I'm God. Right. I'm God. Right. Like,
just, by the way, I'm God. By the way, have you heard? I'm God. He just like walks through the town, just right. like finger pointing at people and be like, hey, I'm God. I'm God. Did you know? I'm God. Right?
He doesn't do that. If you were God, would you do that?
I mean, I would totally do that. I'd have some Ray-Bans on and then I'd just like finger point at people and be like, I'm God. But I think because their relationship has just been built on like friendship and like they're cousins and they grew up together. And they like battled together and they practiced together. Right. Like, I think this has never been brought up until the time of Arjuna's little meltdown where he's just like, I don't know what to do. And then Krishna's like, okay, I'm the authority here. Let me tell you, here's how this works. You're not the body. You are the soul, blah, blah, blah. And he's giving all these instructions. And this is the time where he's like, okay, just so you know, like, I am the divine. Right, you can trust this knowledge. And then Arjuna's like, okay, I got you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think Arjuna has known in his heart because he chose Krishna, having Krishna versus Krishna's whole army.
Totally. Yeah, right? Such faith in Krishna.
So there's an understanding there that Krishna is something greater, an asset or a great friend, whatever you want to, like Arjuna knew.
Right.
But at the same time, this is the first time he's hearing all of who Krishna is.
Right. Yeah. Right. And he even said, Prabhupada says, Arjuna's super enlightened and he's always been happy that he has such a great friend as Krishna. And now he's, even though he himself accepts Krishna as the source of everything, Arjuna's kind of thinking, well, maybe others may not. So this whole rest of the chapter is kind of like, in order to establish Krishna's divinity for our sake, he's requesting Krishna in this chapter to show his universal form. So that's kind of how Prabhupada prefaces this chapter. And he says in the beginning, this chapter reveals Krishna as the cause of all causes. And we've talked about this, how Krishna is even the cause of Mahavishnu, from which the whole material universe emanates. And Prabhupada's very clear, Krishna is not just an incarnation, but he's the source of all the incarnations.
Yeah, so to clarify what you just said, I'm thinking it out loud. Mahavishnu is Krishna sitting kind of floating in the universe, right? And from his belly button, the whole creation is created. But Krishna, the one that is with Arjuna, isn't necessarily always Mahavishnu, right? Like he isn't
in that form all the time.
In that form.
Right.
So like, so it's almost like Krishna has different expansions or incarnations that are doing their own thing. Since Krishna can be one and many because he is God, he can stand with Arjuna and Mahavishnu can be floating in the universe at the same time. And so I think we're stating that Krishna is not an incarnation. He is the source of all sources.
Totally.
If anything, Mahavishnu comes from Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yes? Exactly. And I think there's a lot of confusion out there because one might think, aren't they the same? Vishnu and Krishna, they're the same. Yes, but it goes deeper. Like you're kind of clarifying. Krishna is not an incarnation. He's the source of all the incarnations, whereas Mahavishnu is an incarnation of Krishna.
Yeah. He's the origin of everything.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's so interesting how, Prabhupada even prefaces it in the purport that actually when Arjuna sees the form, the universal form of Krishna, he becomes frightened, but Krishna's so kind that after showing him, he'll go back to his original form.
Yeah. We'll it's interesting that like it took It took ten chapters. It took 10 chapters for Arjuna to like actually like get out of that state that he was originally in chapter one. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, I like that point. Yeah.
And I think that is a testament to our own spiritual journeys, right? Because it takes a long time to build that faith and build that love for God, right? It's for us and all of our listeners. So I hope it's like, this is a lifetime of like really understanding who Krishna is, how to build this relationship. It literally took him, Arjuna, 10 chapters. I keep screwing
ten
up.
Chapters.
10 chapters to literally like understand, okay, Krishna's got me, right? So just know that this entire lifetime that we have, it's just a process of just learning how to love God.
That is such a good point. 10 chapters for him to get. So that kind of to me means like, be kind to yourself and patient with yourself. It takes time. Like I think I mentioned many episodes ago, the thing that Ridhayananda Maharaj says, that spiritual life in the beginning, it's easy. It's magical. You might think, I'm going to be the next sannyasi next one day.
And thinking that.
I'm just.
Yeah. Maybe Shyamali is, hey, don't make her feel bad.
Shut up.
Maybe. I think you'd be a good
sannyasi. No, I was thinking.
I was so hesitant when I said that. I was like, I think you'd make kind of a good sannyasi, I guess.
A sannyasi is a renunciant. So they basically like, they leave it behind their possessions and they travel around the world spreading Krishna's.
Right.
You can do it.
Yeah. I'm just thinking like in the beginning, I wasn't thinking of myself. I was actually thinking maybe like, because I was thinking of a man, even though sannyasis don't have to be men. I was just thinking like, it's very common to see young students in the initial phase be all fired up and like, oh my gosh, I've got this. This is so easy, so magical. I can sustain this for life. And then there gets a point we all hit a wall where it's not so easy. And that wall, Ridhayananda Maharaj describes, is where you reach the point where you left off in your previous life on your spiritual path. And I always love thinking of it that way because it's like, yeah, then you're braced for, it's not always going to be easy. It may be easy still, and that's wonderful. But I don't know, you're ready for the challenges that come and it doesn't catch you off guard, because I know many people that get very caught up in like, I must be doing something wrong if I'm not feeling the magic. Most of the time we don't feel the magic. And it's, what are we going to do when we're traversing the desert?
It's like any relationship, right? It's like you're in the honeymoon phase with Krishna. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is everything I want to do with my life. I just want to devote my entire everything to this. And then slowly like difficulties come up and you're like, oh my gosh, can I do this? Like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing?
Is Krishna the one?
Is he the one? Then you kind of like get initiated and you're like, okay, I'm committing to this. And then you don't show up every day perfectly. And you're like, I don't always feel the magic and the love, but I'm here. I'm committed. I think I love Krishna and I'm just trying my best.
And and there'll be days where you're feeling it. Wow, this is magical. And then the next day you might be like, what happened to that feeling? It's totally gone. I feel dry and nothing. And
it's also very planetary too. Okay. Just know that your relationship with Krishna will ebb and flow and that's okay, because it is a relationship, right? There are days you're going to be super in love. And there are days you're going to need a little bit of help.
So I thought of that when, great point, 10 chapters for Arjuna to come to this point where he's like, okay, I think I'm good and I think I get it. And Arjuna even says, Prabhupada says something here that like, okay, Arjuna finally agrees to what Krishna has said several times, that Krishna's speaking to him for his own benefit. So Arjuna acknowledges, and this is beautiful, he acknowledges that all of this is happening to him by Krishna's grace. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to accept Krishna's grace, I think, when it's positive. Mm-hmm. But the thing is to accept Krishna's grace when it's like, this does not feel like grace.
When things happen in our lives or things are taken away, like, that is the hardest, where we have to stop and see where Krishna's grace is. Because remember, Krishna can see the whole timeline. He can see your whole lifetime. He can see millions of lifetimes before this body that you have now. And he can see future lifetimes, right? So we just need to trust that process and trust in Krishna's timing.
And I think it's really, really hard to do that. I think we all go through that experience of feeling like, no, I feel like I had what I wanted. Now, why is it gone? And like, and I think it's good to remember that this has happened to us many times in our lives. And how did it end up last time? You had to give up something, or something left your life that you wanted to keep. Like, what good came from it? What realizations and understanding and growth came from it? Because it's life. Like, we want so bad for things to work out exactly the way our mind has, you know, like, we want to have control over the outcome of things, but Krishna does have his plan. And in hindsight, we can always look back and be like, Okay, I can see why that wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I thought of? Which this was one question we answered in the Lady Sangha. Maybe we can tack this on to the end just for the sake of getting through more text. But what's one thing Krishna took from your life and realizations that came from there? Mm. We don't have to do it now because I think we could, that'll deviate into story time. Mm-hmm. But we can get through some more text. And when it fits, let's all answer that.
Yeah. Oh, wait, can I have one more thing to say? Yeah. Okay, so there was like, did we ever talk about Steve Jobs' commencement speech?
I don't think so.
Literally thinking of one thing Steve Jobs said. Yeah. Let's see if it's what you're going to say.
I got it. Okay. So basically Steve Jobs, before he died, he gave this commencement speech and he did mention the Hare Krishna. So he was, when he was really poor, he said, I didn't have a dorm room. So I slept on the floor in friends' rooms and I returned Coke bottles for the 5 cent deposit to buy food with. Wow. And then I would walk 7 miles across town every Sunday to get one good meal at the Hare Krishna temple. I loved it. Right. And then he goes on to talk about it, but it's like, he also said, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking back. And I think that's where, and he also said, you also have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever, Krishna. He didn't say Krishna, but like, those are basically the things. Yeah. And it's like, you have to trust that those dots will connect for you.
I love that. The dots will connect, you know. Here's a nice segue to one thing that I told them before we started filming, that this one Swami in our line said that we, I don't know if we've gotten to the verse yet or we'll get to the verse, but it's just one concept about the dots are always connected, whether you can see it now or not. So someone asked this Swami the other day, what is your favorite verse in the Bhagavad Gita? And he's like, oh, there's too many good ones to decide. Also, depending on my moods, it fluctuates, but okay, for fun, let me say one. And he said one verse that everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. And then he says, and I've never thought of it in this way, that's like a famous verse that anyone who studies the Gita will know of. But he said, you know, for example, you give your significant other a pearl necklace. She opens the box and on a string, there's only 3 pearls. And it would kind of be like, wah, wah. Exactly. Because he said, you're not supposed to be able to see the string that connects all the pearls. Ooh. The beauty of it is when you can't see the string, and it's all covered with pearls. And I thought, huh, that's so true. I haven't thought of that angle. And he said, you know, of course, there's the right timing, the person, the situation, and that all falls under its own categories. But throughout all of that is the thread that connects everything, and that is Krishna. Mm. And it felt so like it pierced my heart with things I'm dealing with and going through in my own life that I felt like, yeah, no matter whether we can see it or not, whether we're happy about it, or like Priya said, things are taken away that we really want, that we feel like, why? But we have to at least trust that Krishna's the thread connecting it all, whether we can see it or not in that moment.
Mm, I love that. And I have a great example.
Yeah?
This podcast.
What do you mean?
Oh, do say.
Well, say.
I think if we go with the narrative that I created this podcast, which I think we all came together.
You birthed the podcast. Well,
yeah, you birthed it. We just came together, yes, but that's you the cast narrative. Us.
Okay, well, it was Krishna because I think I can't remember even how many years back, but I think I met Shama like 15 years ago in Canada as I was passing through doing a road trip, stayed at her house, briefly met to the point where barely remembered each other well. And like, it's not like we created a long life friendship from that quick encounter. Mm. And then seeing that was like, 15-ish years ago.
Yeah,
maybe?
A long time ago.
Yeah. And Shamali, I've known you, I don't even know for how many years also, but
we were like babies
in like passing also very quick interactions where it was like you could tell that like, oh, this is so lovely, and like we knew of each other, we met each other, and also in passing, who would have thought that that, you know, meeting each of you individually for such brief moments at a time would eventually come to the place where we developed our friendship so much further, where you've both individually developed huge careers, or, you know, like passions towards being in media and all of that, who like all of that, we came all to live in Los Angeles after none of us being from here, becoming friends, and then this podcast coming together, like we couldn't have seen in hindsight that all of these things and all of these steps and these small moments would have come together to this moment now.
That's the best example, Priya.
That is great.
I love that.
But perhaps the three of us, just speculatively, maybe we were doing this for many lifetimes together, the three of us. And instead of a podcast with all these like great technological advancements, we would just like take little notes of the Gita and put them on a carrier pigeon and like send them to each other. You know what I mean? And that's how we were doing this for many lifetimes. We would just send carrier pigeons to each other.
Yeah. And it's only through like Steve Jobs, what you brought up, only through looking back that it adds so much weight to those passing interactions, as you said, kind of like I've been on the Star Wars marathon, kind of like we went from the back, like from the last episode forward. So then it added so much weight when like there's this whole epic love story between Anakin and Padme, and Anakin goes on to become the greatest.
I'm like zoning out as you're talking about Star Wars.
5 seconds. Okay, literally has a point. They're like rolling their eyes at me. I promise you there's a point. So they fall in love, whatever. And Anakin goes on to become the greatest villain. And in a way he led to Padme's death. But then when we went back forwards, or when we went back to the beginning, sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Keep going. Please let this end soon. Keep going.
Just my point is when we go to the beginning part of the movie, when Anakin is young and Padme's young and they meet, it adds so much weight to that brief meeting. Because I thought, oh my God, Padme has no idea that I'm meeting the person that's about to lead to my inevitable death. And similarly,
go ahead, keep going.
Similarly, like Priya said, these passing interactions, when I think back to like the first time, I could have a vivid memory, Priya, of being in the Dallas temple, and briefly it was a feast going on upstairs, and it just, as you were talking, it was a flash of that moment where I went over and I was like, hey Priya, and you were visiting from Houston, and we were like, I don't know, maybe 10 years old. We were young.
Oh my God, wow. Like,
babies. Yeah, and who would have known, sorry, I'm bumping the mic, who would have known that decades later we'd go on to all these, like you said, little moments that would lead to this. So that was the thought when like, for all three of us, who would have known that all those little flashes, little moments would lead to what we're doing now? It adds so much weight to the passing interactions.
Krishna knew the whole time.
Krishna knew.
Yeah. We need to trust in Krishna's timing.
Which is also why this lady Sangha is so meaningful.
Yeah.
Right? Because you don't know how small interactions of one night could lead to great friendships, can lead to your life changing completely. Because to be honest, I think we can all agree that our lives have changed drastically having this podcast in so many different ways. And so you never know how small interactions can make a huge impact in your life.
Love Beautiful. It. All right. Well, that was a lot for text one. Let's move on to text two.
Shama Sangeeta.
Okay. She's saying her own name.
She wants to move on.
I was like, that's enough talking now. And Star Wars references. Okay.
Chapter, 10 seconds.
Chapter 11, text two. Arjuna speaking. Oh, lotus-eyed one. I have heard from you in detail about the appearance and disappearance of every living entity and have realized your inexhaustible glories.
Interesting.
Okay.
Cool. Oh, lotus-eyed one, I have heard from you in detail about the appearance and disappearance of every living entity and have realized your inexhaustible glories.
I think he's just trying to talk about, like, he's kind of summarizing the fact that we learned about Brahma creation.
Right.
Like, Mahavishnu creates Brahma. Brahma creates every living entity. Shiva is the destroyer. Krishna is above Brahma and Shiva, and he is the ultimate creator and the ultimate destroyer. Like, he's kind of like summarizing all of what he's learned over the last couple of chapters.
You know what he's doing? He's attentive listening. Aww. He's like, because Krishna went on a giant monologue about who he is, right? And then Arjuna did what every good relationship does. It's like he said, Krishna, if I'm hearing what you're saying, you are blah, 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 blah. So he's attentive and reflective listening.
Reflective communication.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Very mature, Arjuna.
Yeah. Good job, Arjuna. And you know, every name that he calls Krishna has a meaning. So Prabhupada says here, he's calling Krishna lotus-eyed one. Well, for one thing, Krishna's eyes appear just like the petals of a lotus flower. But Prabhupada says, this part seemed interesting to me. He called him lotus-eyed one out of his own joy because Krishna has assured him that he is the source of the appearance and disappearance of this entire material manifestation. And I thought, why would then in Arjuna's specific predicament that he just is getting over a whole anxiety attack that he has to kill his family, why would that bring him joy then to think that Krishna is the cause of the creation and destruction of everything? Mm. And you guys can chime in, but I think that would bring him joy because he would realize like, oh, maybe I don't have to run to the forest. And maybe like Krishna says, this has all already happened. So whether I take my role in this war or not, these people will be destroyed.
Yeah, he's right? realizing that Krishna was right the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, and it brings him like relief, yeah, you know?
Totally relief.
Like yeah. anyone, knowledge always makes you feel better. Like yeah. just understanding something better, you're like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yes.
Okay.
Whew, okay. Right, right.
But also, when you read that, I was looking at the book and I just saw the part of like Lotus Eye out of his joy, and I didn't read further. And my thought process was, you know, when you smile and you like your eyes get all squinty.
Yeah.
So I thought they were talking about how Krishna has lotus eyes when he's in like when he's having joy because he's like squinting his eyes.
Oh, sure.
That's cute.
Okay.
That was my thought process.
With that one.
And then Shambhali goes on to talk about, oh yeah, because he now knows everyone will die and that's okay. And I was like, read that through.
I saw you smiling. I thought Priya's really enjoying what I'm saying right now. Cute.
I'm enjoying my own narrative in my own head.
That is cute though, that he gives him nicknames,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Really beautiful nicknames.
Yeah. Very sweet.
All right. Okay. Anything else on chapter 2, that's ladies? Text 2.
Yes. Go, Shyamali.
Okay. Three texts so far. Very nice. Okay. Krishna says, Arjuna says.
Hello, Arjuna.
Who says?
It's Arjuna.
Arjuna says. Sorry. Who said? I said. Okay. O greatest of all personalities, O supreme form. Though I see you here before me in your actual position, as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. Oh, interesting.
Ooh.
So interesting that he's describing his universal form as the form that he, Krishna, has entered into the cosmic manifestation.
Yeah.
That's not his usual form. That's not his chilling at home form.
No. Not like on the couch watching Netflix form. Yeah, not his form. Have you ever, I don't know if this is dating me, but did you guys ever watch Power Rangers growing up?
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
Power Rangers.
Totally.
Okay, so they all had their own individual forms and animals, but then they would come together to this big universal form and it would just kill and destroy everything. It was so powerful. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Totally.
Yeah. I feel like that's the form that Arjuna wants to see.
Right.
You know, this metamorphosis into this giant, everything that Krishna is.
Right.
That's the form.
Right.
To me, that sounds so scary. It's so interesting that he's show me all of you, exactly who you are. But
show me all of you.
Show me all of you.
I feel like as part of a friendship, right? You want to get to know a person and fully understand them. And so I can see where Arjuna is coming from, but visually speaking, I can't imagine there's actually pictures of Krishna's universal form in the Bhagavad Gita. If you have maybe we can find it real quick so people can visualize it. But if you have the orange covered Bhagavad Gita.
It's, plate 11.
After page 427, you're going to see a bunch of pictures. And then
mine's plate 11 too on my Bhagavad Gita. Amazing. So let's just go with plate 11, whatever a plate is.
That's scary to see in person.
Yeah. So imagine if you can look at that page, you can see Krishna's manifestation of his universal form is very intense because it has every aspect of him. So I can't imagine Arjuna knowingly wanting to see that.
But I don't think Arjuna is knowing what he's asking right now.
Oh, totally.
You know what I mean? I feel in any great relationship, any friendship, you want to know everything about the person, right? Because you just want to feel closer to this person. But I feel like Krishna has described, yes, I am good, but I'm also destructive. I can do both, right? If God is everything, then he literally is the good, the bad, the ugly, the everything, right? And I think that Arjuna is not quite realizing how big that is. So I think he's asking, I just want to know what that form looks like, but he has no idea because he's never seen it before. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And the sweet thing is that we've already said time and time again that Arjuna's having this whole conversation for our benefit, but Prabhupada really emphasizes that in the purport because he says again, as far as Arjuna's concerned, he's totally convinced and inspired by the statements of Krishna, but in order to convince others in the future who might think that Krishna's just an ordinary person, that's why Arjuna desires to see him, Krishna, actually in his universal form. To see how, quote, he is acting from within the universe, although he's apart from it. So it's interesting. This form is how Krishna is acting only when he's in the universe. No other place.
Wow.
You know?
Okay.
Within the universe, although he's apart from it.
So he doesn't just just show that form all the time, yeah. like at the grocery store. Like right. it's only for certain instances.
Only yeah. within the universe.
Could you imagine you're just at Trader Joe's and you see Krishna? Krishna goes, whoa. You know?
Oh my God.
So it's only for certain instances and for certain people that Krishna shows that beautiful form, that universal form.
Mm, right.
That's amazing. I mean, I don't know. If I put myself in Krishna's shoes, it's a lot to be vulnerable to that degree.
What do you mean? For who to be vulnerable? Arjuna.
Krishna.
Oh, say more. Yeah.
Because like you would have to show every aspect of you, the scary ones too. Ooh. And like, how do you know that like your friend is going to greet that and be like, yes, I see you and I am in awe of you instead of I see that and what the heck are
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that's true. That does take a lot. Wow. That's Priya. That's a really interesting viewpoint. Like seeing it from the side of Krishna to be like, okay, he's being vulnerable and he's showing the good, the bad, the ugly. Like if God is everything, then he is the good, the bad, the ugly, like everything. And so Arjuna, if he was less developed in his spiritual consciousness, he could be like, whoa, that's too much, dude. I'm going to walk away, you know?
Yeah, and I also think that's why they waited 10 chapters because I think you develop a deep friendship where you feel like you can trust, you know, the person that you've met.
Yeah.
Because like for me, like I can say like the other day, I felt like I exposed myself to a group of people that like were not all like knew me very well.
What do you mean expose yourself?
Like just shared something about myself that I wouldn't normally. Oh, like, my God. Like an inner thought that you just like, you know, like maybe you think like, oh, I don't know if I'm too much of this or if I whatever right like just qualities about yourself that you're not even processed fully yourself but you might share with like a really close friend because they know you so well that they will help you even process that. But I shared it with a group of people that don't know me that well and I thought, oh my gosh, this is such an uncomfortable inner feeling of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And so what to speak of Krishna here going, I am everything. Right. Let me show you all of my, you know,
everything.
Yeah, that's so interesting to point out. And I think like going off of that thought, because Krishna's in Arjuna's heart, he has the little edge to know, okay, he's ready now to handle this, you know? Yeah. Like most of us, like you point out, for most of us, when we share all of ourselves with someone, even though we might intuitively feel it, we're like, there's the question mark of like, is this gonna be too much?
Like imagine like Krishna showed the universal form in chapter one. While Arjuna is having a breakdown.
Oh my God.
Right.
And like, that, the forest.
Yeah, that would bewilder Arjuna even more. Cause you'd be like, dude, like I'm already having a crisis and I don't know what you're doing right now, but I'm going to walk over here now. You know what I mean? Like, so it took 10 chapters to build that trust, build that relationship, build that friendship.
Right,
and again, a testament to us in our relationship with Krishna, it's going to take time to build that, you know?
Right. And again, with the nicknames or with the, not nicknames, but the beautiful names in the Sanskrit, Arjuna addresses the Lord as Purushottama. And Prabhupada said, this is also significant because since the Lord is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that means he's also present within Arjuna. So Krishna knows the desire of Arjuna and he knows that Arjuna has no special desire to see him actually in his universal form. Interesting. So he really confirms Arjuna does not want to see him for his own self because Arjuna, for his own needs, he's completely satisfied to see Krishna in his personal form as just Krishna. But the Lord then can understand that Arjuna wants to see the universal form really just to convince others. So that's so interesting. Arjuna had no personal desire for confirmation. So Krishna knows he wants to set. Oh, second factor is Krishna also understands that Arjuna wants to set the criterion for the future, Prabhupada says, so no imposters would pretend they're God, you know, because he said people should be careful because one who claims to be Krishna should be prepared to show his universal form to confirm his claim to people.
Wow.
I love that. There are people out there who think they're God.
Oh, yeah. Lots of people out there.
What do you respond when someone tells you I'm God?
Please show me your universal form.
Can't wait.
Prove it.
I know what it's supposed to look like. Yeah. I looked at plate 11.
Yeah. I know what it's supposed to look like. Show me your form.
Show me
girl.
Your form.
Girl, bye.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Anything else on text number 3?
No.
That's it, guys.
I really like framing it in that way. Arjuna really had such faith and trust in Krishna that he didn't need to see it. He had no desire to see it for himself. That's so cool.
But I'm excited to see it.
And I know. I would want to see it.
I would be like, this is so cool.
I would want to see it if you guys were there with me to see it.
Why?
Because then I could just like hide behind you if I'm scared.
That's really cute. That is cute.
Lizard.
That's like in real
life. I'm joking.
I would be very endeared by that. I'd hold your hand, Priya.
Thank you.
I'd hold your hand, Priya.
should be like, loser.
Anyways, that wraps up this episode. Please join us next time for chapter 11, text number 4.
Beautiful.
Thank you for listening.
See you next time.
Bye. Beautiful souls, if you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
the Modern Yogi.